Support for this broadcast of Two Rivers 30 Minutes comes in part from a grant from Striffler's Family Funeral Homes.
From TubeCityOnline.com, this is Two Rivers 30 Minutes, a weekly series of interviews with people making news around the McKeesport area. Produced by Tube City Community Media Incorporated, a nonprofit corporation. I'm Jason Toger, the executive director. On this show, we talk one-on-one with elected officials, community leaders, and others who are trying to make a difference in the Monongahela area. And we also take your questions and comments on Facebook and Twitter at Tube City Online.
Youth who live in neighborhoods with more community assets, those include things like parks, library, health services, and barbershops, are less likely to report feelings of hopelessness. This is according to a new study from the University of Pittsburgh, UPMC, and with participation from Carnegie Mellon and WashU, including some of the students in the study are from our listening area in the Mon Valley. On the line with me right now from his office at Washington University in St. Louis is Dr. Nicholas Soko. He was the lead author on this study. Good morning, Dr. Soko.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Also on the line with us from UPMC Children's and the Department of Pediatrics at the University of Pittsburgh is Dr. Allison Solba. Good morning, Dr. Solba.
Well, wonderful to be with you.
Thank you both for taking some time to talk with us about this, because I think this is a topic of interest to our listeners, including those in the Steele Valley and Woodland Hills school districts who were some of the students who were included in this study. Dr. Soko, since you were the lead author, I'm going to ask you first things first. What did this study measure? Who did you talk to? Who did you survey?
Yeah, so we were interested in using data that came from a survey that occurs every couple of years across all of Allegheny County for high school students enrolled in various schools in that area. And specifically, we focus on high school students. These surveys ask about various health risk behaviors, but I was particularly interested in some aspects of mental health that we know to be important among young people. And so in this study, I was looking at metrics related to depression. So hopelessness reported by young people, non-suicidal self-injury, and then suicidal ideation. So seriously contemplating suicide, which we know impacts a very large proportion of youth across all three of those outcomes, which was another reason I wanted to really examine those constructs.
Before we get more deeper into that, one thing I wanted to ask you about was this: is this a voluntary response? Students who responded to the survey, is this voluntary, or are they all asked to participate?
So all are asked and able to participate. However, they're not required to. Parents of students also receive informational letters about this survey, and they can opt out of their child's participation. However, youth ultimately are the ones who assent to participate if they're agreeable to it.
And I mentioned that because one of the things that jumped out at me in the results is something like 58% of the students who responded identified as female or were assigned female at birth. And it just, I wanted to ask you before we get more into the weeds with this, are girls more likely or people assigned female at birth more likely to talk about these issues than young men?
Mm-hmm. It's a good question. And overall, I think our sample is nicely representative of the schools across Allegheny County. What I'll note is that with any type of school-based sample, you're going to miss students, right, that are historically excluded from schools, or youth who are, right, not able to attend school for one reason or the other. So we kind of acknowledge that that is a potential bias of what we're seeing. That said, I think in general, we tend to see that this is representative of students across high schools, and you know, the proportions of things we're seeing here are very much in alignment with what's seen at a national scale.
We're talking with Dr. Nicholas Soko, who is an assistant professor of pediatrics at Washington University School of Medicine. He is talking about some research that he did as a postdoctoral fellow at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. On the line with us also from the University of Pittsburgh is Dr. Allison Solba, who is in the pediatrics department there at Pitt and is also affiliated with UPMC Children's. So one of the discussions in your study is that you would strongly expect that students who were growing up perhaps in an area that was in decline, that was in poverty, that had a high proportion of vacant buildings or a high unemployment rate or high poverty rate, that you would expect a strong correlation with depression and suicidal ideation. But that is not exactly what your study revealed, is it?
No, and I think that's a really important distinction that you highlight. Traditionally, our approach to research regarding communities has really focused on these types of deficits, right? So poverty rate, unemployment. And there's a wealth of literature sort of looking at those metrics and comparing them to aspects of mental health, physical health, and other aspects of adolescent well-being. So really the goal of our study was to take a more strengths-based approach and focus on community assets or bright spots and look at how those might be correlated with youth mental health. And we found, right, that across many different types of assets, whether it was parks and libraries, food resources, even transportation, so access to bus stops and things of that nature, were significantly correlated with lower rates of hopelessness among youth living in those areas. And so what I think that highlights, right, is that really focusing on these strengths and these bright areas might be the path forward for us to be really more thoughtful about how we're doing this research and how we're best supporting the youth that reside in these neighborhoods.
You're going to make my friends at the Carnegie Library of McKeesport and the Carnegie Library of Braddock very happy to hear this, because we've had them on this show numerous times to talk about the fact that the library is more than a warehouse for books. It is a community hangout space. It is a, what do they call it, a third place or a third space, a liminal space for young people to work on homework, to learn more, learn different skills, to learn different things. And you point that it's very strongly linked with better health for young adults. But you also point out barbershops and hair salons have a correlation here. Tell us about that. Why is that?
So what we know from research that has been around actually for many years is that these spaces, particularly barbershops, are particularly salient for Black communities. And many kind of public health related interventions, as well as screening programs, have occurred in these hubs. And so I think that's one example, right, of these third spaces that you're noting, which we know are not just for folks to seek services, but actually involve important transmission of information, right, networking between people, resource sharing. And so this really begins to highlight some of those spaces in a little bit more detail.
Religious institutions as well, churches, temples, also correlate to improved mental health for youth.
Yes, we also found that these different faith-based organizations showed that relationship. You know, one thing that I'm hoping to do in future work is examine, right, like what are the specific aspects of those spaces that youth feels protective for them? So is it having youth-facing programming there? Is it just having a space to gather together, having activities that they can engage with? And so those questions are all things we're going to look at in the future, but I think are really promising based off of what we've seen in this data.
Dr. Solba, I'm going to want to bring you in a moment or two, because I know you and some of the researchers that you work with are doing actual field work with some of the youth in these particular zip codes. It's about 26 zip codes around the city of Pittsburgh, Homestead, Braddock, centered around that central part of Allegheny County. But Dr. Soko, before we get to that, why these 26 zip codes out of the more than 100 in Allegheny County?
Yeah, this was largely just related to the sampling of the school-based survey that's administered. And so ideally, right, we would like to look across many more zip codes to understand what's going on at an even more granular level. But what I think is important about this study is it really introduces a methodology, which is looking at strengths first and foremost, that I'm hopeful can be translated throughout, right, the county, throughout multiple zip codes, but then also across the nation, right, as well, as we look at different cities and areas where we'd want to do this work.
We have a break coming up, but before we take that break, talk to me about the measures, the different data that you collected, feelings of hopelessness, suicidal ideation. How do these present, not on the page, but in person, in real life? How would a mom, dad, grandparent, aunt, or uncle see this in their young person?
This is one of the challenging things, right, about raising a young person, is that for parents and guardians, what I always talk about is maintaining open communication with that young person, sort of having discussions around mental health with them. And even when that happens, they might not disclose everything that's happening in their lives to you. And that's developmentally normal, right? Because they're progressing to independence, they're learning risk-taking and decision-making on their own. So what I encourage, right, is for parents or guardians that are concerned about their young person, obviously leaning on that primary care doctor, someone with whom that young person has a relationship. But what we know is that having one trusted adult in a young person's life, whether it's a family member, a mentor outside of the family, is a very important protective factor for all these mental health related outcomes as well. And so that's what I sort of counsel on with regard to how we can support youth that we think might be experiencing these types of symptoms. But very clinically, right, we think about youth who become more withdrawn, perhaps aren't as engaged in activities that are of particular interest to them. One of the kind of red flags I look out for is if there's something they've always been excited about in their life and they suddenly have this loss of interest, that begins to concern me and warrant further attention and conversation.
So it may be more than just being a, you know, quote unquote, scare quotes, moody teenager. It may be the sign of something that's actually more serious that you want to explore.
Absolutely. Yeah. We also look for things like big changes in sleep patterns, changes in appetite, and even energy level. Those can all clinically go along with sort of the hopelessness piece. But I think that, right, engagement and activities, we know young people love to do the things they like. And so if they're suddenly taking a step back from that, that's something to consider.
We have to pause right there. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit further about how some of these things manifest themselves in the community and what other than at-risk behaviors that young people who are depressed or are feeling suicidal or hopeless may engage in. We've been talking with Dr. Nicholas Soko. He's at the Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis. Also on the line with us is Dr. Allison Solba. She is at the University of Pittsburgh. This is a joint study that was done by the University of Pittsburgh, UPMC, with assistance from Carnegie Mellon University, about how community assets, everything from transportation to parks to libraries, may be associated with improved mental health, including for people in our Mon Valley communities. Part of this study conducted right here at home. Broadcasting from the Tube City Center for Business and Innovation in downtown McKeesport, this is Two Rivers 30 Minutes on Radio 81 WEDO, 1550 and 101.1 WZUM, the Pittsburgh Jazz Channel, and Tube City Online Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Support for this broadcast comes from the City of McKeesport Fair Housing Office. Fair housing is your right, and the Fair Housing Act prohibits discrimination in housing because of race, color, national origin, religion, sex, gender identity, sexual orientation, family status, or disability. That includes renting or buying a home, getting a mortgage, seeking housing assistance, or engaging in other housing-related activities. For more information about Fair Housing Act protections in the City of McKeesport, call 412-675-5020, extension 635.
And the study is in the open part of the JAMA Network website. Where can people get access to this to read it for themselves? It's some medical studies are not free. This one is free for the public to download and read themselves.
Yes. So the great thing about JAMA Network Open is that the articles are available to anyone who would like to read them. So we can ensure that a link is provided for that. In addition, we've created a dashboard that's an interactive interface for people that want to look more granularly at this data. And has really been part of our guiding conversations moving forward on how do we use this in our design of interventions and programs in these communities. So we can share that that dashboard link for folks as well.
And actually, if you go to upmc.com and click on the news link, it's the first link as of when we're recording this. So you can get a link to the study that way as well. Over to you, Dr. Solba. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about some of the different studies and research that you are supporting, because I know you work in a lot of the urban communities around the City of Pittsburgh. Is that correct?
Yes, and I think we have a lot of community-partnered work that's going on that really integrates beautifully with the study that we're talking about today, and again, takes a strengths-based approach to really starting from a point of, you know, focusing on what's going well and how we can best support both research and programming to continue to enhance these assets that are so critical to youth safety and development. And there are a few projects that we're working on. One that really ties in nicely to the data that we're looking at here, where we're actually engaging young people and asking them to take us on a journey through their neighborhood to really show us in real time the places that are meaningful in their communities, to really, you know, walk us through their day-to-day lived experiences and highlight those spaces, such as the libraries, barbershops, you know, YMCAs and other community spaces that are really important and impactful for their well-being. And so that project is ongoing and is really exciting and something that we're doing across multiple neighborhoods in the area. And so I'm excited to see what we learn from that work, because, you know, in addition to sort of the the survey type of analyses that we can look at, that really allows us to, in young people's own eyes and in their own words, illuminate those third spaces or activity spaces that are really important in their mental health and overall well-being.
And then some of the other, go ahead, continue.
I was going to say, one of the other projects we're leading is really a community partnered project where we're actually implementing a intervention together with community organizations and facilitators that's for young people and is focused on racial justice, gender justice, and economic justice. And that one's called Forging Hopeful Futures. And we're currently working in 16 neighborhoods in Pittsburgh and also have sites in the Washington, D.C. metro area and are looking at the impact of that programming on multiple different types of violence experiences among young people in our region.
We're talking with Dr. Allison Solba from the University of Pittsburgh. Also on the line with us is Dr. Nicholas Soko from Washington University School of Medicine about research they've done on how community resources are linked to better health for young people, even in neighborhoods that would otherwise be considered impoverished, perhaps a high unemployment rate or high poverty rate. And something that comes to mind for this is, you know, oftentimes in the Pittsburgh area, especially in sort of the Mon Valley communities, we focus on what we lost. You know, we hear, you know, Braddock had all these movie theaters, McKeesport had all these department stores, and you know, the good old, we talk about the good old days. And something that has come to mind for me, especially when I'm talking with young people, is that, A, they don't have any frame of reference for what happened in 1960. B, for them, this is their good old days. This is the day that, you know, 30 years from now, they will be fondly remembering these community assets, whether it's the library that they hung out at, or, you know, the after school program or the Boys and Girls Club or the youth basketball that they participated in. That will be something that they enjoy. And one thing that strikes me about your study here reveals is that we have a lot of assets in the Pittsburgh area, in these urban areas, and they maybe are more important than we realize. Is that accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the one of the research questions we really wrestled with was, right, is measuring assets simply the opposite of measuring deficits? And I think we can confidently say no, right? When we look at that correlation, it's not perfect, right? There are areas that, by these traditional measures of unemployment, poverty, et cetera, actually have very high asset levels, as you said. And yes, I would argue that looking forward, right, when we think about adolescent health overall, we're really focused on how can we support well-being, how can we support thriving moving forward. And I think by focusing on strengths, we also build empowerment among young people, which we know in and of itself is protective against a variety of health risk behaviors. So yeah, taking the strengths-based approach, I think not only uplifts youth, but uplifts the communities that they're in order to continue the progress that we've seen.
The other thing that jumps out at me along those exact same lines is that there's a line, I think, in your study where you talk about, you know, traditional measures of depression are correlated to things like abandoned buildings or broken windows, those sorts of environmental factors. But those, I think you mentioned in the study, usually focus on adults. They're not focused on young people. And what it occurred to me is that community leaders, elected officials who tend to be older folks like me, Gen X and Gen Y, maybe you're focused on those kinds of traditional measures of assets in our community, broken windows, abandoned buildings, those sorts of things, and focusing on the deficits, to use your phrase, rather than preserving and expanding and growing those assets. That may actually be something that not just informs mental health treatment, but should maybe inform policy decisions as well.
Yeah, and I think part of what's really exciting about this work is it's just the first step. And one of the things we talk about in the paper is that there's really a need to better understand and actually measure these assets. And so what that might look like is actually bringing youth together with researchers and allowing them to guide us on what are the bright spots in your community, where feel like safe spaces to gather, and asking those questions to actually really improve the science that we're doing. And we're already doing this work. In addition to the curricula and programs that Dr. Solba mentioned, I've worked with young people in a youth empowerment program where they actually engage in this community mapping, and they delineate areas where they see as bright spots and where they want to have even more opportunities to come together. So I think this work is already happening, but really finding ways to amplify that is our next step from this work.
We have another break to come up. Like I said, the time goes very quickly. But before we take that, I wanted to ask you, this is a fairly large data set. It's 6,300 students. So 6,300 students participated in this from more than 20 zip codes in central Allegheny County. Were there any strong differences in terms of demographics, in terms of racial demographics, or in terms of heritage, first-generation Americans, anything like that?
So we didn't explicitly compare those across different zip codes, but all of our analyses controlled for those factors, meaning that we think, right, independent of these other variables, we're still seeing these very strong relationships. But what I think is important, right, is that we recognize how these different identities may contribute to what spaces are particularly salient for those individuals. And so, again, I think that's part of the future research and something that we'll continue to look at as we do this work.
Any strong differences between students who identified as straight or hetero and students who might be identified as part of the LGBTQ community, or that was outside the scope of the data?
So we look when we kind of take a broad view at things, we consider, right, how does mental health differ across these different populations? And we know, not only from our study, but from others before that, that folks who are LGBTQ report sort of higher rates of these mental health related measures. But with regard to assets, we were really just focused at the community level, right? How are any youth that are living in this particular area potentially buffered against some of these negative health outcomes, independent of their identity? And so I think that's, again, a piece for future work is really understanding, if we take these folks separately, are there different relationships that emerge that we're just not seeing at this this broader level?
Let's take our break right there. When we come back, I want to ask you about both about areas for future research and where you would like this to go, especially in terms of what at-risk behaviors people, young people who are depressed, who are feeling suicidal and hopeless, may engage in. Okay. Dr. Nicholas Soka is on the line with us. He is with the Washington University School of Medicine. Also on the line with us, Dr. Allison Solba. She is with the University of Pittsburgh. And we are talking about a new study that is in JAMA Network Open about community resources being linked with better teen mental health. You can find a link to that study by going to UPMC's website, upmc.com, and clicking on the media link. From the Tube City Center for Business and Innovation in downtown McKeesport, this is Two Rivers 30 Minutes, and we'll be back in 30 seconds to wrap things up.
Support for this broadcast comes from Striflers Family Funeral Homes. Since 1866, Striflers has provided compassionate, professional memorial services for families in White Oak, McKeesport, Dravosburg, Portview, and the surrounding areas. Striflers offers comprehensive pre-planning services and aftercare. And through its affiliated company, Design Monuments, Striflers also provides permanent markers and memorials crafted in stone, bronze, and other high-quality materials. Learn more at Striflers.com. or call 412-678-6191.
Welcome back for a final few minutes with our guests this morning. We're talking about how community resources, community assets such as parks, libraries, and health services, even things like barbershops and churches, can help youth feel less depressed, less hopeless, even in areas that may be impoverished. Our guests this morning, Nicholas Soko, who is at the Washington University School of Medicine, also on the line with us, Allison Solba. She's at the University of Pittsburgh. This is a study that was conducted by the University of Pittsburgh and UPMC Health System. We've had a lot of folks on this program to talk about strategies to divert youth from violence, in particular from gun violence. We had First Step Recovery Homes and Healthy Village Learning Institute on here for a two-part episode a couple of weeks ago to talk about some of the street-level work that they are doing in communities like McKeesport and Duquesne. I know this is outside the scope of this particular study, but I guess I'm curious, do young people who feel hopeless, who feel depressed, who may be suicidal or think there's no future, do they tend to turn to at-risk behaviors, and what are some of the at-risk behaviors then that they might engage in?
Speak to that a little bit. So when we look at, right, sort of the issues that impact young people or adolescents, and what I mean by that is, right, ages 13 to 18, mental health is one of the highest. We know substance use is also very high. Sort of risky sexual behaviors is another one. And these are really the kind of classic health-related measures that a lot of adolescent researchers like to look at. Because our study really just focused on the mental health piece, I think an exciting next step will really be looking at, right, like, how are these community assets actually buffering against other important health indicators in this group that we know is at a higher risk for engaging in some of these behaviors.
And I'll add, when it comes to violence, you know, we, and either witnessing or experiencing or being involved in violence, we know that safe spaces matter. And so, you know, while we didn't look at that in particular in this study, that many of the assets are places where what young people could actually spend time safely in a protected environment, and that's a crucial piece of adolescent well-being. And so I think, you know, we're excited to look at whether or not these assets may protect against violence. But I think I would suspect that to be the case, in that for many young people, really making sure that they have access to safe spaces to spend time, particularly in after school hours and places to really engage in the activities that are meaningful in their lives, is really important for adolescent development, well-being, and safety. So we're excited to look at that further.
There's part of this that strikes me as it might sound intuitive to people, especially those who work in youth development, like our friends at the La Rosa Youth Foundation or different churches and temples that have after-school activities, you know, pickleball or whatever, that, yes, if you give young people something constructive to do, it's going to, just as for grown-ups, exercise alleviates depression. Being socializing with other people alleviates depression. But what strikes me is your study is actually putting numbers to this, with 6,300 students from a very concentrated urban area. That yes, it's confirming sort of the bias that maybe we already had. But it's very interesting to see it laid out in numbers like this.
Yeah, and I think what's particularly important about that, right, is at the policy level, being able to impact change is ultimately going to come from showing this data and showing the numbers to folks who are particularly interested in that. And what I think is also great about this being in a medical journal is that clinicians, right, so patient-facing providers can look to this and begin to ask young people about some of these spaces. So as adolescent medicine doctors, we like to talk to young people about their passions and their goals for the future. And so part of that conversation might actually be, hey, where in your neighborhood do you feel like you can connect with adults who care about you or peers who have similar interests, where you feel like you can be yourself? And so I think there's real clinical implications for this too, and actually giving providers, right, the space to talk more openly about neighborhood spaces that are protective and empowering young people to connect with them and providing those connections if they don't exist already.
You've anticipated my next question here in the last 30 seconds, which is there's a talk show host on another station in Pittsburgh who always says, oh, you need to find yourself a good church home. And what strikes me is, you know, are there ways in which, again, the aunt, the uncle, the grandparent, the mom, the dad, the next door neighbor, whoever, maybe can encourage their young person, if they seem like they need that outreach, they seem like they need that support, to encourage them to seek out the local library, to seek out the local Boys and Girls Club, whatever it is, whatever the assets are in their community, and maybe leverage those assets to help with the mental health and mental well-being.
Yeah, I think in addition to those folks being trusted adult supports for that young person, being able to guide them and connect them with those different spaces could be really critical. And my hope is that by partnering with youth in the communities where they're living and actually mapping out these areas, then we can share that back, right, with all of these neighborhoods that we've partnered with in order to really assist with those connections and ensure that young people who have goals are able to meet those goals by connecting with these wonderful spaces.
The study is called Community Asset Density and Past Year Mental Health Symptoms Among Youth. It was conducted by the University of Pittsburgh and UPMC with assistance from Carnegie Mellon University. You can find it online, upmc.com/media, and click the link there for the study. On the line with us this morning has been the lead author, Dr. Nicholas Soko. He's at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis. Dr. Soko, thank you so much for taking some time to talk with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. I appreciate you having us on.
Also on the line has been senior author Dr. Allison Solba. She is at the University of Pittsburgh. Dr. Solba, thank you for taking some time to talk with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
And thank you all for listening today to Two Rivers 30 Minutes, broadcasting from the Tube City Center for Business and Innovation in downtown McKeesport. So long for now.
You've been listening to Two Rivers 30 Minutes, copyright Tube City Community Media Incorporated. Opinions expressed on this program are not those of Tube City Community Media Incorporated. Listener support makes this program possible. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible contribution, please visit our website at tubecityonline.com and click on the donate link. You can also get a free subscription to this program and other podcasts at our website using Apple's iTunes or Stitcher.com. If you've got a question or comment, we hope you'll write to us. Our address is Tube City Community Media Incorporated, P.O. Box 94, McKeesport, PA, 15134. You can email us at tubecitytiger@gmail.com or call us at area code 412-614-9659.
And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Tube City Online.